Cassandra Overby has long explored a dimension of Europe that I only recently discovered myself, the continent's long-distance trails. Each country in Europe has beloved and venerable long-distance trails, and Cassandra wrote a guide to these. It's called Explore Europe on Foot. She inspired me to hike around Mont Blanc a couple years ago, and last year, she inspired me to take a one-week series of hikes lacing together historic mountain hotels in Switzerland's Bernese Oberland, in the shadow of the Jungfrau. She's been doing a lot of hiking lately and joins us right here in our studio to report on what's new on the great trails of Europe. Cassandra, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you've been busy. I mean, when I write my guidebooks, I have to go back and visit all the hotels and restaurants in all these countries. And when you write your book, you have to do the hikes again, don't you?
Oh my goodness. It's a lot of hiking. Basically a long hike every single day for about 3 months at a time.
A long hike every single day for 3 months at a time. So you were over there for 3 months. And what countries were you hiking in?
Everywhere from Spain to Croatia, Slovenia, France, did some Alps. So 8 different countries, 10 different destinations within those countries.
What a beautiful thing. You must be in such great shape. You must be so tight with your gear. You must love your shoes and your sticks.
Absolutely. Although it's amazing how quickly you wear through things when you're hiking that much.
I bet. I can't imagine. But it's also probably amazing how good your body gets when you're doing it day after day, an 6-hour hike every day. And what's your average altitude gain in a day?
Ooh, I'd say around 1,500 feet.
1,500 feet.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, this past summer, I was carrying my 4.5-year-old. And so that added a whole different level of physical challenge. And I did really come back strong.
I bet you did. You know, when I hiked around Mont Blanc, I was amazed at how many people had a baby on their back.
Right.
There's a lot of people hiking with their kids.
There are. It's very popular in Europe to bring your kid with you. I think it's wonderful, and it's a really one way that people with kids can actually get out there.
Yeah, you don't need to let having a kid keep you down, that's for sure.
Right.
What better way can you have quality time with the kids and surrounded by nature and getting in good shape and eating good food?
Right, it's the perfect.
You talk about cultural hiking. It's part of the subtitle of your book, Complete Guide to Planning a Cultural Hiking Adventure. What do you mean by that?
So this is not hiking for the sake of exercise. It's not about getting out there and getting a really good workout, although that is a really nice byproduct. So I actually look at hiking as a better way to travel. So it's a way to get into small towns where you can meet locals and where you can listen to local music, eat local food, and really discover local culture.
You know, that's one thing I like about Europe is the way nature and culture kind of share the same crib. You know, they're in that together.
Completely. They're so connected. You can feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere and then 10 minutes later be in a really beautiful medieval village.
I was with you in France starting the Tour de Mont Blanc hike when we were filming, and we walked up a Roman road that was 2,000 years old. Those cobbles were laid 2,000 years ago by the Romans. It was a trading road up in the Alps.
Right.
And we came to that gorge with the old bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we visited the farmer who made the cheese, and we popped into that little church where all the hikers go. I mean, there's so much culture that overlays the hiking experience. And of course, you're surrounded by dramatic nature, the Alps, the Pyrenees, whatever mountains you may be in.
Right. It's astounding. And I think it really makes you think of hiking differently. And that's something that I found is really interesting, as I find a lot of people drawn to exploring Europe on foot, whereas in the U.S. they would not consider themselves to be hikers.
I think that might be me.
Yeah, because you fell in love with it, right?
I love hiking in Europe. And, you know, I like hiking in the States, but there's some extra dimension, and it's that cultural hiking you're talking about.
And the comfort. You cannot forget the comfort.
And the cuisine.
Right.
I mean, food is great on the road. Food is great, period, if you know where to eat and you're going to eat well. But if you've been hiking all day, and if you're in high altitude and you're surrounded by people who are just as exuberant and healthy and positive and into it as you are, what better environment for enjoying the great food of one culture?
Right. And you don't have to worry about how much you eat because you work it all off plus more.
Dessert, bring it on, because I'm hiking every day.
Exactly.
I was that way. I just take a little bite of dessert now because I don't need empty calories. But when I'm in the hiking mode, calories are a good thing. Calories are your friend.
Right.
Now, a new focus you've got lately is home base hiking. I know you're working on a book about home base hiking. When we think of a venerable trail, a long-distance trail all across around Cornwall or all across Scotland or England with the Hadrian's Wall or all along the medieval border of Wales, Offa's Dyke, you're going someplace, you know. But home-based hiking is a different kind of hiking.
Right.
What appeals to you about that?
So in Europe, they actually call it star hiking because you start from like a middle location and you bump out from there, which I think makes so much sense. But star hiking is really wonderful when you're not in a good position to be able to go village to village or hut to hut. Mm-hmm. Like me, when I became a parent, it became very hard to do that kind of travel. And there are a lot of people who are in the same position. They don't want to pack up every day.
Right.
They don't want to unpack every day and be in a new spot. But there are a lot of other really amazing things about home-based hiking, too, and that is it gives you a lot of flexibility. So if the weather turns, it's so easy to swap days and to be able to make the rainy days museum days or things like that, and to make the really beautiful days hiking days. And if you want to hike more, you can add in more day hikes. And, you know, you can stay in the same accommodations and really get to know your village. So I'm kind of famous for falling in love with a certain restaurant. And then I will go back to that restaurant every night.
You know, there's a lot to be said for that. The
wait
staff knows you. You know the menu.
It's exactly.
It's comforting. It's like a coming home and putting on your favorite slippers.
It is.
This is Travel with Rick Steves, by the way. We're talking with Cassandra Overby. She's a writer and travel enthusiast who wants to revolutionize travel one hike at a time. Her book is called Explore Europe on Foot, and it gives travelers an alternative way to experience Europe through cultural hiking experiences. Cassandra provides hiking route guides and all sorts of tips for places like France and Germany on her website. And her website is exploreonfoot.com. And explore on foot is divided by hyphens. So, Cassandra, let's just kind of bounce around Europe a little bit and talk about some great hikes. You were traveling in all these different countries. You and I have been talking about in Switzerland, in the Alps, the Tour de Mont Blanc. That's a 100-mile, 10-day hike around Mont Blanc. I was just talking about hiking in the Berner Oberland around Interlaken using the little village of Gimmelwald as my springboard. I'm dreaming about the Dolomites. That's the Italian Alps, and I know you were just there. Tell me about the Dolomites.
So the Dolomites are thus named because the rocks there are made of dolomite. And they're a totally different kind of mountain that you're going to find in other parts of the Alps. They're not rounded. They're not gentle looking. They're spires. Steep, sharp, jaggedy spires.
Stark.
Right. And they're beautiful and inspiring. And when you're in the Dolomites, you get to get up on these high alpine paths and walk around those mountains. And you can see the pastures, the Alps.
This is one thing I like is the cow culture that mixes in with the high Alp culture. And you've got the highest alpine meadow in Europe there, the Alpi di Susi. And that's got all sorts of farms dotting this lush grasses. And it's sort of a cool mix. And when you see farms, you know there's little cafes, there's homemade yogurt, there's cheese. There's this culture that you can nip in and out of as you hike.
Right. Something that I don't think a lot of people understand is alpine culture is a thing. So a lot of times being in the Alps unites people a lot more than being French or being Italian or being Swiss. And so you'll see a lot of those similarities in all of the Alps. But alpine culture is this really enchanting thing. It makes you feel like you've really gone back to a simpler time of life.
When I think about it, I'm just thinking back on some of my experiences lately. You come upon a farm. And in the summertime, the farmer realizes, hey, I could make a little money selling drinks and light lunches and fresh pie, you know? And you find these just dream come true little oases of food and drink as you're hiking in the middle of nowhere. You come around the corner and there's a happy conviviality where everybody's, you know, putting down their sticks and their bags and they're just kicking back and having a beer halfway through a day of hiking.
Right. Or the thing that I love, too, is that everything is sold on the honor system.
Yeah.
You'll have a bunch of cheese just in a refrigerator and a little coin slot.
There you
and
go.
They trust that you really will leave your coin. And
I was walking by a farm, an Alp, and the young woman was there from the village, and she was up there for 3 months or something with the cows. And I just dropped in, and she was seemed a little lonely, and she was happy to talk. And she was practicing her English, and I got to learn what it was like for her to be all alone up there with her herd.
Right. It's something that we think of as being from the olden times. But the truth is, like, this culture still survives and it still is a way of life. and it's really cool to be able to be a part of it.
By the way, I saw on my map that this was a little farm, and I'd heard that there was a woman there that was tending the goats and the cows and so on, and it was a side trip. So we stowed our bag just behind a bush outside of the main trail, because we didn't want to hike all the way up the steep part with our bag on us.
Right.
Do you ever do that? I mean, I felt very safe leaving everything I had just behind a bush as I left the big trail to take that side trip.
Oh, yeah. I always feel much safer even solo hiking in Europe than I would ever in the U.S.
And no COVID concerns at all up in the altitude.
No. I mean, you're outside. Everybody's breathing the fresh air. You're separated from other groups of hikers.
Hey, let's talk about Britain, because the English love to hike, don't they? There's just sort of woven into their DNA. In fact, they have the Ramblers Club, I think, in England, right? And
right.
They actually enforce the law of the land that no landlord can put a fence to keep you from walking across. If a trail goes across, they've got to provide a little gate. There's all sorts of cool gates you encounter when you're hiking in England.
Right. It's a game changer because it opens up so much land that otherwise you would never make it into. So these nice pastures, and you're allowed to wild camp to sleep outside as well.
And one thing I learned, I can think about it in Italy on the Riviera. I can think about it in Switzerland hiking out from Gimmelwald, and I can certainly think about it in the Cotswold villages in England. A lot of us are busy sightseeing. You don't need a lot of time to have a memorable hike. If you've got 2 hours before dinner, you can have a great hike.
Oh, completely.
You could walk somewhere for 2 hours and take a taxi back to your little town in the Cotswolds, and it would be one of the highlights of your experience.
Right.
You'd get to see all those towns from the back, hiking on the trails rather than driving on the big noisy road.
Right. You can see so many sights that otherwise you would just miss.
That's an intimate approach. Talk to me about your favorite hiking experiences in England.
Ooh, I am a big fan of the Lake District, because if there's anything that the British love like walking, it's tea. And it's the perfect opportunity to pair the two, because it's this drizzly, rainy spot a lot of times, but it's really something that you do want to walk in. You put on your rain jacket, you go out into the fields and the meadows, and you climb these hills, and then you come back and you're slightly chilly, and you get to sit inside by the fire and drink tea and have little cakes, and it makes you actually really enjoy hiking in the rain.
Two things come to me when you say that, because I know exactly what you're describing. I wear glasses, and when I step in, my glasses are filled with condensation right away. It's so cozy, you know, that feeling. So you take the glasses off, and then you sit down, and hikers are there with their dogs. Dogs are welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And you have your beautiful tea and maybe some scones. And you got to remember that these little villages are kind of speckling the countryside, and they seem to be placed perfectly if you're taking a hike. Whenever you really need a little break, you've got a pub, you've got a little charming cafe, and you've got a chance to settle into the culture.
Right. And it's a nice spot because you could go village to village, or it's also a really nice place to just stay and home base, and you can do so many day hikes.
What's your favorite home base for hiking in the Cumbrian Lake District?
Ooh, I would say I stayed in this one little place. It wasn't actually a village. It was right outside a village, and it was where William Wordsworth lived, a little inn, It was up in the hills.
And you walked from there?
Yeah, and I walked from there.
Yeah, because he was so inspired by the nature that's all around you to write his poetry.
Right.
I can imagine being a poet in the Lakes District of England.
Oh, completely. And staying in a place where he stayed so many years ago. And it just had the ambience, and you could just soak it in.
You know, the English love to make little sort of homemade guidebooks. And you can go to the little shops in any of these corners in Britain and pick up guides that are charming little intimate collections of walks and things you'll see along the way. So don't miss out on that if you're visiting in England. The Cotswold Villages, wonderful walks. The Cumbrian Lake District up in the north. My favorite home base is Keswick up in the north of the Lakes District. Tell me some of your favorite summits where you get to the top and you get a 360-degree view.
Ooh, are you talking in the Lake District?
Anywhere.
Or just anywhere?
Well, first of all, Lake District. What's your favorite summit in the north? I know the easy one, Cat Bells. Do you know Cat Bells?
Yeah.
Outside of Keswick.
Right. That one's beautiful. But my favorite aren't the summits there. My favorite are actually going around the little lakes.
The little lakes. Oh,
and disappearing.
You have a trail all around the lake.
Right.
Buttermere has a nice trail around it. And it's in Seattle, we have Green Lake, and it's a nice 3-mile walk, you know. But you find a little lake, invariably there'll be a trail all the way around it, 360 degrees.
Yeah. So that's actually what I really like to do when I'm there. But if you're
nice
talking...
thing about that, no altitude gain.
Oh, exactly. Right.
I like towpaths also along rivers. Gentle altitude gain if you go uphill on a river.
Right.
We're exploring long-distance hiking options as a fun way to get up close with Europe right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Cassandra Overby provides details for 15 long-distance trails in Europe, plus a number of shorter routes in her book called Explore Europe on Foot. Her website is explore-on-foot.com. And Cassandra, we've just got a minute left, and I tell you, I was so inspired by the practical information that's in your book, and I employ it when I'm walking anywhere. Can you take the last minute or so of this interview and just review the most important practical tips when we're going to be hiking a little bit beyond our normal comfort zone?
Sure. I think my very biggest tip is be encouraged. I know there are a lot of people who don't think of themselves as traditional hikers, but the best thing about hiking in Europe is that you can really find your own pace. There is a trail for everybody. Trails where you get to a village every 2 miles, trails that are flat, trails that are incredibly steep if that's what you want. Another tip that I have is make sure that as soon as anything hurts, as soon as anything feels uncomfortable, don't try to tough it out. That's how you get an injury or blister. Just stop and address it. The moment that you address a blister or a backpack strap that rubs is your way of guaranteeing actually that you can keep hiking and keep enjoying your trip.
And that was a concern of mine when I did Mount Blanc, because I knew I had to stay healthy for a week of serious hikes, every day a long hike.
Right.
And I didn't want to get some little problem become a big problem because I had no time to recover. I had to be ahead of the game.
Yes, exactly. Another thing that you really want to do is walk in advance and test out everything. So the walking isn't just good for building you up physically, but it shows you where you have weak points in your gear. It'll let you test out your shoes and make sure they're broken in. You can test out your backpack and make sure it really is comfortable and it fits everything you want. You can wear your pants and make sure that they don't irk you in a weird way. Walking in advance as much as you can is probably the best thing you can do.
And that probably gets your ankles and your knees in better shape. I'm never going to be a champion kind of physical specimen, but I just don't want to have a silly little tweak in my knee or a pull something in my ankle. You got to use those joints.
Right, completely. And, you know, the thing that I find too is people who go out and start doing all of these hikes, it does change them and it changes how they like to spend time. And they end up doing more and more of these hikes.
The most important tip I got from you, I gotta say, was stretch. Because I'm in my 60s, and I hiked up to base camp on Mount Rainier. I literally could not get out of the hotel bed the next morning. I was a cripple because I didn't stretch.
Right.
I did much harder hikes in Mont Blanc than I did to base camp on Mount Rainier for 6 or 7 days in a row. Never had a single problem because I stretched. I stretched like a madman before, during, and after.
Right. What I like to recommend, too, is if you can't decide between having your beer or stretching, take your beer outside and stretch while you drink your beer.
There you go. Words of wisdom from somebody who knows how to mix the great outdoors with culture. And that's the subtitle of Cassandra's book, Explore on Foot, Your Complete Guide to Planning a Cultural Hiking Adventure. Cassandra, always great to have you here. Thanks and happy hiking.
Thank you so much.
Find out how Egypt is anticipating a big boost to its tourism industry soon. That's next on Travel with Rick Steves.